Blog Talk Radio.
Are we spiritual sowers or trash talkers? We'll be talking about that in a few minutes. Stay with us. Our roots began in Africa, where we enjoyed self-determination and freedom, which were rooted in our sovereignty. Peace, family. Welcome to Dare to Win, the Us Lifting Us weekly radio program that airs every Thursday evening from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Dare to Win is the place where we have sobering conversation about the economic plight of Black people and the imperative that we build the global economic machinery that will free us and once again put us on the path of making history. We at Us Lifting Us have developed an exact methodology on how to build this global machinery and pass it forward to our children and future generations. To join tonight's conversation, please call 929-477-2789. Press the number 1 on your phone when you want to make a comment or ask a question. If you prefer to listen on your computer, go to www.usliftingus.com, scroll down to the bottom of the homepage, click on the Dare to Win button, then click on Listen Live. At that time, you will be on the Blog Talk Radio site. If you want to get reminders from Blog Talk Radio for upcoming Dare to Win programs, click on the Follow button. ULU members, we have our own social media community. Please join if you have not already done so. There is a Dare to Win group, and we would love to have your feedback on past Dare to Win programs, as well as topic suggestions for future programming. I'm Sister Q, and joining me for this evening's discussion is Brother Ankh T, who, like me, is a member of ULU. Peace, Brother Ankh T. How are you doing tonight?
Greetings, Sister Q. I am excellent. Good to hear you. Glad to be with you and the ULU audience tonight.
We're glad to have you, Brother Ankh T. What makes you ask the question, are we spiritual sowers or trash talkers?
Thank you for the question, Sister Q. Let me begin with a quote from our esteemed and beloved ancestor, Dr. Frances Kress Welsing, who wrote in her seminal book, The Isis Papers, 1991, children are the only future of any people. If the children's lives are squandered, and if the children are not fully developed at whatever cost and sacrifice, the people will have consigned themselves to certain death. And that quote just says to us two very important things. We know that our communities are in crisis. We have a number of issues confronting us, which we are not fully addressing. And more importantly, that our children are at risk as never before. So that if our children are not being properly secured, protected, and given the institutions that will help them to develop and grow, not only are we taking a hit in the present moment, but our future is very dim. And so in that spirit, in that light, Sister Q, I'm thinking to myself, what is the problem? And in short, America is in crisis. This is not news to us. I think that it is good news in that we are witnessing the disintegration of the American system, of this white settler colonial project that has been masquerading as a nation for the last, and we are witnessing its collapse under the weight of its own internal contradictions. So we know there is an environmental crisis, wildfires, drought, flash floods, mudslides, all of these resulting in the loss of life and loss of property. Mm-hmm. And most damning of all, there's no coherent strategy being advanced to address this crisis. There is a health crisis. Our people are reeling from heart disease, stroke, cancers, diabetes, Alzheimer's, COVID, AIDS, no health insurance or not enough health insurance. And this is clobbering African American and melanated people day in and day out. There is a political crisis that threatens the governmental apparatus. Witness the January 6th insurrection of 2021. And I hope people are watching the hearings being put on by the January 6th commission that was pulled together to investigate the January 6th insurrection. There are so many lies swirling around that insurrection, or it was just an ordinary day at the Capitol. People came there and it got out of hand and whatever. But the commission is making very clear that this was a strategy that had been in place for months, and that it could have been a whole lot worse had it run its full course. So that even the governmental apparatus of this country suffered a tremendous blow on January 6th, and we're not out of the woods on that yet. We could see another January 6th kind of insurrection, and so that's a very serious crisis confronting the Democratic, the people in this country. If that were not, there's also a violence crisis. And we witnessed the staggering number of mass gun shootings, 309 so far since January 2022, and counting. So, you know, we've witnessed the 4th of July shooting in Highland Park, Illinois, where 7 people were gunned down and more than 30 were wounded. We realized that on that same weekend, 8 people succumbed and were killed in Chicago, Illinois, and again, victims of gun violence.
Brother Auntie, let me interrupt you right here for just a minute. You said
sure.
309 shootings since January 22. Are you saying separate shootings or the total number of people injured or killed in these shootings was 309?
Thank you for the question. 309 mass shootings. In other words, in a mass shooting is defined as any shooting incident where four people or more are wounded or killed. So
okay.
Since January 22nd, there have been 309 of these mass shooting events.
Okay.
And that was a couple of weeks ago in terms of when that data was put together.
Mm-hmm.
So we've seen them. Uvalde, the 19 children and their two teachers, the Buffalo shooting, and it just goes on and on and on. That's a crisis. And
sure.
What we are witnessing, and finally there's this economic crisis evidenced by rising gas and food prices, the growing income inequality gap, the rising homeless population, and everything that we've described, the environmental crisis, the health crisis, the political crisis, the violence crisis, all of that are the symptoms of the economic crisis, this disintegration of capitalist America. So what is really happening is that the human family is struggling to abandon capitalism as an economic model and embrace cooperative economics as the global model for providing goods and services to the human family. We need an economic model where the majority of the people own and control collectively the means of production, and these means of production are no longer owned and controlled by private individuals, private families, and the corporations they control. That is the struggle we are caught up in. Which economic model to use in the 21st century and going forward? Since nature abhors a vacuum, the question for us becomes, what will replace capitalism as the economic model of this country and Western civilization, since capitalism is global? We in Us Lifting Us recommend and are building a global Ujamaa economy, which is a family-centered, group-owned, African values-based, cooperative economic model, which brings us to this evening's conversation and why we chose this topic, which was your original question, Sister Q.
Mm-hmm.
Are we spiritual sowers or trash talkers? Are we spiritual sowers? In other words, are we sowing spiritual truth, or are we just beating our gums together and talking trash? Our ancient forebears and Kemet, which the Greeks later changed to Egypt, called their language Mesuneter, which means words of the gods or God speech. Meta meaning words and neter meaning God. They saw themselves as gods and goddesses, and they understood that life was and is propagated by good speech, or right words, because this led to right actions or right behavior. They codified this wisdom into a philosophical system that has been passed forward to us under the name of Ma'at. And Ma'at, as many on this call know, means order. And this order consists of seven principles of truth, justice, righteousness, order, balance, harmony, and reciprocity. The highest attribute or compliment that could be spoken of someone was to say they lived their life as Ma'a Karu. That is, they spoke true words and acted in accordance with the words they spoke. This was the whole purpose of the 42 affirmations of Ma'at. Some people call them the negative confessions, but they were really affirmations. And they were designed so that a person's life would be ordered and consistently reflected as an expression of Ma'at. Important was this idea that a person's heart or consciousness was judged at the end of their life against the feather of Ma'at. In other words, if they lived true to their heart, their heart would be lighter than the feather of Ma'at, and the person's soul slash spirit would pass into the higher realms of life. The point we want to make this evening is that these ancient Kemetan people understood that words were powerful because they were seeds. Words contain within themselves the ideas of what they will produce when acted upon. Women and men, therefore, are sowing worlds and realities and futures as they speak, because their words are seeds that will produce good or evil. We as African people must once again fully understand and appreciate the power of seeds and be discreet with our word seeds. Let me give a quick example. Many of us are familiar with acorns, which are the seeds of mighty oak trees. Mm-hmm. When you hold an acorn in your hand, yes, you are holding a seed, but you are also holding an entire oak tree, because when it is planted, it's going to bring up an oak tree. But even more than that, because the oak tree that will then come up, when fully developed, will give off hundreds of acorns. So therefore, you are literally holding an entire grove of oak trees in your hand when you hold one acorn. The power of a seed. We see the miraculous power of the Creator that can compress into a tiny acorn an entire grove of mighty oak trees. And catch this. And yes, we are even more spectacular than the acorn, because we as women and men can and do so multiple things just by speaking. Let me say that again. We are even more spectacular than acorn, because we as women and men can and do so multiple things just by speaking.
Brother Amti, I like that example that you gave, because, you know, people say you reap what you sow, and they don't take into consideration that you reap in kind, but not in quantity. So when you sow that one seed, you don't get one seed back. You get a tree with an infinite number of seeds that can grow, an infinite number of trees with more infinite number of seeds. So I'm glad you used that example.
You're absolutely right, Sister Q. So words are seeds. We speak what we want. To change our reality, we must first change our words. Are we spiritual sowers, or are we merely trash talkers? The reason that I'm coming at this evening's broadcast in this way, Sister Q, is because we have tasked ourselves with the challenge of rebuilding civilization for African descended people. We recognize that we have to rebuild institutions, but they have to be a certain kind of institution.
Right.
And they have to be based on African values, African philosophy, African truth. And so this is a very special and particular kind of work that we are engaged in doing. We recognize that surely we can go to the political science books and the economic books and create those kinds of institutions, but those institutions are based on greed, on exploitation, on violence, on white nationalism, on lies. We do not want to reproduce those same kind of systems. And so we must go back to, we must Sankofa our way back to what is the original Kemetic truth that enabled our people to exist for tens of thousands of years and leave such monuments as the pyramids as a testimony to their genius, their wisdom, and their knowledge. We said earlier that Ulu is building an Ujamaa economy, family-centered, group-owned, African values-based cooperative model. This is the seed we are sowing into the universe, and like all seeds, it must and will come into being. So we in Ulu are building an Ujamaa economy. We are not trying to replicate capitalism. We're not trying to replicate European socialism. We are very clear. We are building an Ujamaa economy. So we have to ask ourselves the question, how then do ideas manifest? So we've got that we're trying to establish the importance, first of all, thing begins with the seed idea. So we have the seed, the Ujamaa economy. The next thing we have to focus on is how does this idea of Ujamaa manifest in the real world? Again, our ancient Kemetic forebears fully understood the process of manifestation. We have declared our intent to ourselves and to our people and to the universe.
Mm-hmm.
So one, we have declared, we have established our intent. Even before we open our mouths, we are clear about what it is we intend to do. Next, we speak the truth we want. However, we can't be talking out of both sides of our mouths. Today's talking spiritual truths, tomorrow cussing and fussing about this, that, and the third. Now we have to focus our attention on the goal. When we focus our attention on our goal, it energizes our goal, breathes life into the idea, expands the idea. And when we continually remind ourselves of our intention, which is the source and the why of our goal, and the source of our goal is divine, in other words, we are co-laborers with the creative forces of the universe. The idea of Ujamaa economies comes through us, but it is also a part of the ancestors and the creative energies speaking to us and through us. So this idea of an Ujamaa economy is bigger than you and I, Sister Q. It's bigger than the people who are currently a part of Ulu. It is an expression of the divine will coming through a community of people who have prepared themselves to be in touch with that divine energy, to hear that divine force and wisdom, and to say yes to that divine impulse and vision.
I think that's very important, Brother Angti. I don't think you can stress that too much.
Well, I thank you, and you're right, Sister Q. The reason that we can't overstress it is simply that the work that we're doing is sacred work. It is divine.
Mm-hmm.
It is the work of a people who recognize themselves as God and goddesses and are creating a future for themselves and their children and for the entire human family. If this was just about you and I getting rich tonight, it would not be worth our time and energy to be on the air and speaking these words. You follow what I'm saying.
Yeah, sure.
People want to come at you with schemes about how you can make $1 million in 6 weeks,
mm-hmm.
how you can become a real estate mogul in 6 months, that excites some people. Some people think, you know, all my life I've been poor. Boy, if I could just, you know, live in a big house, drive a fancy car, have boku money in the bank, I'd be saying something.
Mm-hmm.
It is that mindset that has distracted a large number of people from looking at the underlying problem that this system is corrupt at its core. Exactly. And it is destroying not only human life, it is throwing the entire planet out of balance. It is that bizarre. And therefore,
you know,
it requires... Go ahead.
I was thinking, and you were saying how people talk about themselves. You're talking about the power of the word. And people describe themselves as being poor, being broke, not having enough, not, you know, and not being capable to do anything. And so what they're actually doing is planting the seed for their own destruction. And
exactly.
We have not, as a community, I think, we have not, I mean, Ulu is doing that, particularly. That's why you're here talking to us tonight. But overall, as a group of people, we speak about the power of the Nomo, but we don't connect that power to the words that we say and how what we see around is a reflection of what we just said. We created it with our tongues.
Correct. Correct. And to your point about speaking negatively, tragically, too often, we are doing that negative speaking in front of children. And,
mm-hmm.
and so those words then become amplified, and they get carried forward in the minds of our children, who in turn begin to speak those words, instead of us being able to create a future that is sustainable and productive. We find ourselves wallowing in the confusion and the madness of this disintegrating capitalist white nationalist culture. And,
mm-hmm.
and so to break out of that, A, that's why we said we have established our intent, talking about the process of manifestation. We focused our attention on the goal, which
mm-hmm.
energizes the goal. And this brings about transformation, which allows us to transcend, that is, rise above the obstacles in our path. Like some of us on the call, I came of political age in the mid-60s and early 70s and never thought I would see the collapse of apartheid in South Africa. Those of us during that time looked at where these 6 million Europeans who had come out of the Netherlands and were Dutch had moved into the southern tip of Africa, set up their own state, and then set up a system called apartheid, which was just a legalized segregation, and
mm-hmm.
they held the entire African population of 24 million people in check. And that had raged from 1948 through the 60s and 70s because they had state power. They were willing to use all manner of evil to keep the people down. Many of us said, you know, we're going to fight against this thing, but it looks like it's going to be here for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were shocked and pleased and elated and joyful when apartheid finally collapsed between 1990 and 1994 as a result of the combined struggle of both Africans on the continent and Africans around the diaspora.
Mm-hmm.
So we see the power of our ideas when they are tied to righteous struggle to bring about the outcome that we desire. So we learn from that nothing is impossible to our people. But we have to be very clear about what we're saying. And so the purpose of tonight's presentation, Sister Q,
mm-hmm.
is we want to sow seeds of our working to build Ujamaa economies and Ujamaa villages everywhere African people reside. So we've talked about the power of the seed. We've talked about the process of manifestation, and let me just say that when we focus our attention on the goal, when we declare our intent and we work diligently toward that intent, that energy eventually manifests in what it is that we've said we intend to build. So in other words, what we are doing is scientific. This is not fanciful or whimsical or any of the other terminology that people want to throw at us and say, well, you know, that's that spiritual stuff. You need to be scientific. It doesn't get any more scientific than this. This is how the universe actually works. And our people, going back to ancient Kemet, understood this. And that's how they were able to build the institutions and the monuments that they have left behind as a signature of just the level of genius that was within them.
Absolutely.
So the last thing that we want to do is remind ourselves that our people, all of us, are pregnant with this infant of a global cooperative economic model that, again, is family-centered, group-owned, African values-based. It is a co-op. In other words, all of us collectively together own this economic institution or these institutions, because it's actually plural. We have the challenge of providing for our own energy. We have to be able to feed ourselves, clothe ourselves, shelter ourselves. So in each of these arenas, there will be large-scale cooperatives doing this work. We are called and positioned by our ancestors to do this in this historical moment. Through our work, we are answering the crying need of the human family to move beyond capitalist carnage and chaos and give birth to a world that is sustainable, peaceful, and just. And everyone on this program has a part to play. Everyone listening is, in effect, a midwife and has a role to play. One, visit our website, usliftingus.com. Research our model. If it makes sense to you, hit the join button and become a member this evening. If there are things with what you see that don't make sense, call us at 404-592-2780. Again, 404-592-2780, and say, I listened to your presentation. I went to your website. Here's what I saw. Here are my questions. What am I missing? Engage us in conversation, because our model is not complicated. It's not rocket science, at least not yet. It consists of three basic steps. One, we have to aggregate our money, or another way of saying it is we have to pool our dollars. We have to pool our resources. Like Marcus Garvey taught us in the early 20th century, in order to launch the Black Star Steamship Line, those people who were excited about the idea of Africa for the Africans, when they bought those shares in the Black Star Shipping Line, they were pooling their money.
Mm-hmm.
The way we pool our money in Us Lifting Us, there's an annual membership fee of $50. And then we encourage everyone that understands the work that we're doing to purchase a co-op unit for $1,000. So for every 1,000 members, that equals $1 million. We can begin to do institution building when we're generating resources at that level. In other words, we are not going to work our way toward African liberation and African sovereignty on a shoestring. The exciting thing is that $1.3 trillion flows through black hands in the United States alone on an annual basis.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not talking about taking all of our money. We're just trying to capture 1% mm-hmm. of the resources flowing through our fingers, channeling them into an economic organization that we control, which we call the Mother Co-op, ULU, Us Lifting Us.
Mm-hmm.
It is an LLC. It is a cooperative structure that is able to receive those funds, hold those funds, and then disperse those funds to set in motion other cooperative businesses. That's the second thing. So we pool the money to launch cooperative businesses in all of the communities where we have people of African descent living.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So
yeah.
So now we're operating cooperative businesses. And I can't stress this point enough. The difference between a cooperative business and a capitalist business is that the business itself is owned and controlled by the group. That's what we mean in ULU when we say group owned. In
mm-hmm.
other words, this is not a business enterprise that is owned by an individual or an individual family. This is a group-owned enterprise, and on an annual basis, the group comes together to make strategic business decisions about how to enhance the operation of the business. For those of us that do not belong to a cooperative, we've never had the experience of being involved in the policy setting and making of these business enterprises, whether we shop at Kroger or Publix or Tops or whatever the grocery system is in your neighborhood. If it is not a cooperative, even though you shop there regularly, they are not asking you for your opinion about how the business should operate. What should the salary structure be? How much should the workers be paid? Whether or not there should be an employee profit-sharing program? None of that is ever asked. All they want us to do is come in there every week, buy our groceries, and leave.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how we've been conditioned to think about the businesses that supply the material needs in the places where we live, whether we're talking Target or Macy's or whatever the department store is. Whether we're talking AutoZone or whoever it is that we buy our parts for our cars from, all of these businesses, privately owned corporations,
mm-hmm.
and we don't have any say in how they operate. And we have taken that to be normal. We think that as just consumers, we shouldn't have a say in how these businesses operate. Nothing could be further from the truth. These businesses operate in our communities. They are receiving the funds that we are depositing into them in our purchase power.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the time, the bulk of that wealth then leaves the community and goes someplace else. We want to create a system, a structure, where the businesses in our community are owned and controlled by the members of our community. We set the policy of those businesses, and the profits or the surplus of those businesses remains in our community to do the other things that we need done, like a state-of-the-art school system, a state-of-the-art health system, state-of-the-art elder care. These are how we take care of the needs of our people, utilizing the money that we have in our wallets and in our purses. And so until we disabuse ourselves of the notion that the only way that we can live in communities is to continue to patronize these businesses that we don't control, then we can't change the reality that we find ourselves. So the cooperative enterprises that we are launching after we pool our dollars gives us the ability to change the reality in which we live. And I don't have to tell you, Sister Q, when our children are able to walk into these businesses that their parents have set up and are running and operating, and they see the wealth and the strength of these institutions, they no longer see themselves as second-class citizens. They can hold their head up. They can pop their chest out. They can listen to their elders who now are able to provide them employment and opportunities to advance themselves to go to college and become productive in society. This really puts us on the path to where we begin to make history again by controlling the means of production.
I wanted to say, you know, people speak in terms of the first time they went to a country that was run, you know, a so-called black country, you know, the first time they went, and the plane landed in the airport, and all the people working in the airport were black people, and they stepped out of the airport, and everywhere they saw was black people doing business and handling stuff and running a country, running whatever, and how good it made them feel. And what you're talking about is not having to go anywhere to do that. Just step out your door, and everywhere you look, you see businesses and institutions owned and operated and run for black people.
You're absolutely right. And I'll share this experience I had as a freshman when I attended Syracuse University.
Mm-hmm.
It had always been drummed into my head, go to school, get a good education so you can get a good job. And so when I finally succeeded in getting to Syracuse University, I thought, you know, I'm on the path now. And a guy that I met who was in the same dormitory with me, he was from New York also.
Mm-hmm.
He was going home, and for the Thanksgiving break, offered me a ride because otherwise I was going to have to jump on Greyhound, which is a truly not a good way to ride.
Right.
And so in riding home with him, come to find out, now he's white, by the way. He's a freshman, but he's got his own car. And come to find out that his parents ran a pocketbook manufacturing factory.
Mm-hmm.
And he was at school learning how to help run the family business. He wasn't looking for a job.
Right.
He had a car. Right. He had resources. He was there to learn how to run the family business.
Mm-hmm.
It changed my whole paradigm. And same age, but he's thinking in terms of my family has a business to run. And
right.
I'm in school to figure out how we can run our business better.
Mm-hmm.
And so to your point, yes, many of us stepped off of those planes or cruise ships into those Caribbean countries or African countries, and all we saw was melanated African folk handling business, and we said, wow, that's a different view, a different vision.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're talking about transforming our communities here in the U.S. so that they reflect us. And we know how much profit is being made. And here's the third point of the ULU plan. The first thing is to pool the money. The second thing is to open cooperative businesses. The third thing is then to be involved in the decision-making in terms of how are the surpluses of these businesses being redistributed. What kinds of things do we need our surplus to do? How much of this should come back to the people who work in the form of a bonus? How much of this surplus should come back to the members in the form of a dividend?
Mm-hmm.
But again, these are the decisions that we as a community get to make for the first time for most of us in our lives living in the United States.
Right.
That is mention of our lives that for the most part has been missing. We have not been able to operate and to express ourselves as both political and economic beings. We only have this very truncated political expression where we're allowed to vote 2 years or every 4 years for candidates that have already been picked for us by the people who have a lot of money, which is stunted to say the least, and no opportunity to participate economically as central players in the economic life of our community. And we have to, and the other reason that we came at this conversation tonight, Sister Q, from the standpoint of this African value philosophical system and seeing ourselves as gods and understanding that we can create whatever we want to create based on what we are speaking, the other reason we came at it that way is because we literally have to recreate an entire community, economy, society, and ultimately civilization from the ground up. Trying to take over these existing institutions, whether we're talking about the school system, the family system, the church system, trying to take those over and to reform them so that they're not so exploitative and so destructive of black minds and black bodies, that's a fool's errand. Recent events should show us, have proven to us by now, this system cannot be reformed. Anytime the police pump 60 bullets into a person's body, even after he's on the ground, should tell you there's something fundamentally wrong with this place.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the fact that you have to investigate and go through all of that silliness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
60 bullets in the back. Something is fundamentally wrong with this place.
Mm-hmm.
And we cannot continue to pretend like it can be fixed. It can't. It needs to collapse. It is collapsing. Our concern is as it collapses, we have to make sure we have put in place the institutions that will sustain our ability to stay alive and to take care of our children. That's why this work is not optional. And if we didn't learn anything from the January 6th insurrection, is that the people who were behind that insurrection, both in terms of the militia groups that they've been in, the Oath Keepers or the Proud Boys or whatever it is, those people in Congress who support them, those people in the media who are behind that, if we do not understand what that is telling us, we are in a severe case of denial. We simply must take care and build our own institutions. Now, the good news is, A, we are able to do this. We're more than able to do this. And this is the part that really excites me. Because when we talk about setting up cooperative enterprises, we have already set up the ULU LLC, the Us Lifting Us Economic Development Cooperative LLC. It exists.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have to beg anybody to do that. We just did it. Paid the registration fee. We hired the lawyer. We did the paperwork. Boom, done. You see how easy that is?
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have to wait. We didn't have to ask Biden to do an executive order. We didn't have to put this before the Supreme Court and wait for them to deliberate and bring back a decision. We didn't have to ask our local legislators and commissioners to pass any laws. We just did it.
Mm-hmm.
So that building these institutions is within our means to do right now. The challenge is the only reason we haven't done it is because many of us are not sure that we can do it.
Mm-hmm.
Either we lack the history of how great we are as a people and how much we've already done, or else we are just so distracted and so bombarded by all of the negative messages around us that we've kind of forgotten who we are. But
you know, I think that's the purpose of the messages, to help us to forget who we are. Because those people who are controlling or imagining themselves to be in control know that once we wake up and see ourselves and start doing what we need to do, their set is over. So they keep doing things for us to pick up and distract us from our, what you called, I think, our divine calling, what our ancestors have called upon us to do.
Right. And so as we take seriously the Sankofa process, where mm-hmm. we go back and get what we left behind, and we begin to research that those systems that these ancient Africans had developed, we find in them all the wisdom, all the knowledge to not only build these institutions, but to put ourselves once again in the leadership of the planet. Because let's be honest, the people leading the world are clueless in terms of what is needed. And you know, to have a handful of multi-billionaires who, you know, if you take Bezos and Musk and probably Gates or just a few of them, they mm-hmm. have more combined wealth than 3.5 billion people on the planet. That something is profoundly wrong when there's that much inequality on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And
finish your thought, please. And we have someone on the line who wants to make a comment or ask a question. So you go ahead and finish that.
We've been seduced into thinking that the goal of creating these businesses is to produce profit. The only way profit is generated, it's the surplus value of the work of everybody in the enterprise. The people who currently control these economic businesses, they say because they put up the capital that they have a right to the profit, and they put the profit in their pocket. And the rest of the people who worked 40 hours or 50 hours or 60 hours, all they leave there with is a wage or a salary.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's the source of income inequality.
For sure.
Everyone that was responsible for anything that the business generated should have a say in terms of how the surplus is used. We in the Ujima community understand that the purpose of the enterprise is to create a space where people can work. And then collectively, we look at the surplus of what our work has created, and we figure out what to do with that.
Mm-hmm.
We're not building these businesses to make somebody rich. We're building these businesses to create outlets for people's genius to be expressed, and from the surplus, which is automatic, it's inherent in the process, we then use the surplus to take care of the entire community.
Mm-hmm.
It's not rocket science, but
right.
it makes the difference between a world that is on the verge of collapse and a world that has a sustainable future in front of it. So let me pause there and see what the question or the comment is.
Okay. Caller with the last four digits, 3440, please state your name, where you're calling from, make your comment or ask your question. Thank you.
Yeah, greetings, Sister Q, Brother Auntie. This is Brother Shabaka calling from South Florida. How are you all doing this evening?
Doing quite
yeah,
well.
Yeah, I mean, I'm doing great. I'm doing great. Well, I'm going to need to turn something down a little bit. Yeah. I had a comment that Brother Auntie was talking about the January 16th, and what I call the Confederates. I always like to use the right wing group. I like to give them terms. You know, I still believe the Civil War is still going on. It's just that we don't believe that it's still going on. And so you got the Confederates, and they are reorganizing themselves to get better access to what they feel is rightfully theirs. You know, the propaganda that's been exposed has somehow caused them to believe that the Democrats is putting all blacks into power, and we know that's the farthest from the truth. But still they believe that, and they're acting on that. But I want to also add, as we engage in this conversation, that the Southern Confederate right wing European, they will shoot us down, one here, one there. But when you think of the massive death that was caused by the introduction of COVID-19, which was made in a lab and permitted, all right, to be distributed among populations in the U.S., okay, in which cases like in Michigan and Illinois, in particular Chicago, all right, Detroit, which saw 70 to 75% fatalities of black folks, all right, and that the people who were primarily responsible, all right, for that introduction, all right, and continuation are the same people who are leading the efforts to get a jab in every arm. They're not necessarily the Confederates. They're the ones on the other side, and they're killing in much massive numbers than the Confederates, who somehow think that, you know, black folks got too much, and they just taking them out every time they see them every now and then. These are deliberate things, genocidal things, that the other oppositions are doing. So I told a group of folks I was arguing with, well, I wasn't arguing with them, that what Africans did, we made a mistake by going to Europe, allowing ourselves to be caught in the ice age, be transformed to the Europeans who became devils. So we created that bunch.
So we made the mess.
By leaving home. Now we got to clean it up. And see, we're the only ones that can clean it up. All right. And let me tell you why we're the only ones that can clean it up. One, ULU is a major factor in that by its strategy of organizing units. Because we have to be able to get out into these communities. We have to organize certain kind of units strategically, all right, to be able to assess the environment, all right, be able to economically have leverage in setting economic policy, which in turn will set political power in those areas where we have businesses that Brother Auntie was talking about. And see, we're the only ones that are able to do that. Now, a sister was sending me some information that was dealing with these accelerators that they have, where they have, they have protons bouncing in each other and seeing the radiation off of them. And they use that in order to weaponize, create atomic energy and much worse energy. They said that it's doing it to find God, which is dark matter. But they're using it to develop the harnessing of weaponry, all right, to the point that some people say, well, they can destroy the world. This is some of the people who of the more religious persuasion believe. What they don't realize is that the material that go into the building of this stuff does not come out of Europe or America. It comes mostly out of Africa, okay? And we right now have the capabilities of stopping all of that nonsense that is going on. So I just wanted to lay that out, and I really appreciate the conversation that you have. But, I'll argue that there's not too many good white folks. Okay. They are spiritually deficient, and the spiritual thing that Brother Auntie was talking about, Yeah, we have to not necessarily get lost by following their path, but, you know, following our own path, and those things that come out of our culture, and not forget about it. All right, thanks a lot. Really appreciate what you all are doing. Take care.
Thank you. Thank you for your comment, Brother Shabaka.
Thank you, Brother Shabaka. The genocide is real, which means, therefore, that it's even more important that we get busy building ULU, these ULU-based collectives, mm-hmm. ULU participation in our committee work. So we pool our resources, we open cooperative businesses, we redirect the surplus to build the institutions that our community needs. The world is literally waiting on us, Sister Q, because we have the know-how and the spiritual energy to manifest this vision. Call your family, call your friends, call your neighbors, and ask them, are they ready to build a new, just, and sane world? This process is in our hands. We just have to do it. So thank you, Sister Q. I enjoyed sharing with the family tonight. It's always good talking with you. I'm excited and looking forward to for us going forward and stepping up as women and men, gods and goddesses, and redirecting the course of human history.
Thank you for sharing all the information you shared with us, Brother Ampi, and I think you have sufficiently shown us the power of the tongue, that if we want to create a different reality, we have to really be mindful of what we say. We want to thank everyone for joining us this evening. You can join us again next Thursday evening, 9 o'clock Eastern Time, for another installment of Dare to Win. Peace.
Peace.